This gets asked of comedians every day, and you're like, you really are making it seem like it's such a huge thing. And this seems, you're like, if it's okay, let's talk about stand up. Yeah, totally.
Our friend Joe Firestone is here. It's an honor. And you're talking about my overly polite email asking if you'd come through.
But are you ever like wary of asking people to do any of your own podcasts?
But that's because it's like torture. Like, but yours is gonna be, it's already, I know it's gonna be very laid back and easy. This is a great podcast. It's not like you're like, and now you've got to tell your secret that you've been keeping. It's like you, it's very, I know it's gonna be chill.
I also know some people, when I ask, think that I'm going to give them an assignment because some pods, when you're a guest, they ask you to do homework.
For sure. They're like, can you listen to six episodes? You're like, six, but they're all 3 hours long. They're like, yeah, that'll be just enough to know. Have you had a lot of, is this politeness coming from trauma that you've had to do for podcasts?
I guess I do have trauma. Yeah, I've been asked to do a lot of things. One time I read a book. It was a nightmare, Joe.
Did you like the book?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But you had to read a whole book for a podcast episode. Wow.
Yeah, I just did Ken Reed's podcast, and I had to read a whole TV Guide magazine.
Oh my gosh. How do you even get your hands on that?
Oh my gosh, do you know about this? He has every TV Guide magazine and then he scans it and sends it to you.
He, you know what, you know, he's doing some good work over there, I will say. But that is impressive. That's really impressive. Have you seen the collection in person?
I think he sent me a link to like 55,000 TV guides.
Oh my gosh. Now, was this the book you had to read? Okay.
But, you know, I'm just so happy you're here. Thank you, Joe. It's good to see you. You know, it's good
Good
to
to see
connect with
you.
people.
I know it's been a long time.
How are you doing generally? Good? I want to know, when does Singles Retreat come out, or is it out already?
No, it's not out. It's I think it's going to come out soon. It's really very short. I'd say it's 15 minutes and 45 seconds, if I had to guess.
I am so looking forward to it. How's life, though? Are you doing stand up?
I'm doing a little bit of stand up. The last two big shows I've done have been outdoor shows that are free for the New York City public, and that has discouraged me in a way that I didn't think was possible. And so I am, you know, very eager to say no, I'm no longer doing stand up now, because they it was you know, I just don't think I'll, you know, to have the kind of ability to wrangle free New York City audience outside is just something I'll never, I don't think I could take a, I could take a million classes, never, never have it. That's something you have to be born with. It's an amazing skill, and I don't have it. It's been painful.
I think I can empathize because I did New York City outdoor shows. One comes to mind that was for like a Greenpeace org, but it was one of the worst experiences of my life. Like you said, you do kind of, don't you kind of end up questioning like if you'll ever perform stand up again?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I've been questioning that very thing. And I, you know, I think that now I see shows coming up, not a ton, but enough where I'm dreading all of them. I think, oh, well, those people will come back. It's like a horror movie. They're coming back. They're going to come back to everything, refuse to pay, sit with their children, leave in the middle. Scared. I'm scared of them.
Well, that's the thing too, is like, how much do you dread then being asked again to do another outdoor show?
I'll say yes. I know I'll say yes. You're not going to say no to Greenpeace. You're not going to say no to that because you're a good person. But it's, you know, you have to know that it's going to be, you know, it's not, it's just that you're looking with the sun. You're able to see the faces of people who resent you. And that is hard. Over 100 people come out for free comedy to hate it. Horrible.
Isn't there really something to be said for, like, it's better to do stand-up when you can't see anyone's face?
Oh, I'd love to be put in the shoebox. Just put my head in the shoebox. Then I'd be fine. Next time I do the outdoor show, I gotta bring a shoebox for my head.
When you tour doing stand-up?
I don't really tour. I'm not really good at touring. I have almost no audience. And so by the time, you know, I sell out a room of 70, okay? I am basically, you know, and then, I obviously want to stay in a room, an enclosed room, you know? And so there's a lot, you know, and feed myself. There's a lot. I would say it's not really worth it for me to tour at my stage of development, but I would say
70 is good.
70 is good. But I would say that if you are touring, that is not good. Okay, 70 people. I'm never going to shake a stick at 70 people. But I would say if you're touring, you need to sell more than that. 70 people gets you. It's just, it's not the money. The system it's not right. You got to post clips. I'm not posting clips. Have you been touring?
No, of course not.
Why?
For the same reasons. I mean, 70 sounds wonderful to me. Am I supposed to post clips and get people out? I think it's harder to get people out of the house.
Oh, it is like, I think it is harder to get people out. But also, even if I posted clips, if I started posting clips, I don't think that would help sales, to be honest. I think people would be like, let's not go. This is what it's going to be like. I don't want to go.
It would have the opposite effect.
Yeah, I get returns. So it's just not... I'm not supposed to leave. It's really tough.
I try to like tread really lightly on social media, but you're telling me like your brand is not like posting TikToks all day long?
No, for sure it is. I'm posting all the hit TikToks you've seen, I've made them. You know, if you've seen a hit TikTok, I'm behind it. Just keep that in mind. Yeah, for sure. I don't have TikTok. I don't have clips. I don't understand how people add words to videos. There's so much. It's gone so quickly out of my hands. Any stand-up skills slipped through my fingers, like water, trying to hold on to water.
Were you doing stand-up when you went to Wesleyan? Like, when did you start?
I started in St. Louis in like 2009.
You know, I think it gives depth to what we're talking about, how we're both going to quit.
Yeah, any day now. I've quit. Then after those outdoor shows, I've quit. But in St. Louis, that was like a very, I think the scene is a little bit more open. I don't know. I think the scene was so small when I was doing it. It was like really small, mostly older dudes. And so it was like, in that way, there was like room there, like, there was, you could kind of, it's not like you were like, this is my scene. This is like, I'm my community, but it was like, there was, like with any scene where there's like a status quo, there is room for an encouragement. Your brain is like, you have to do something alternative. You have to think outside the box because this is the box. You're not supposed to get in this box. So in that way, I think it kind of was like, oh, let's do some weird shows and kind of see who comes to them, because there's not stuff like that right now. And so in that way, I think it was good. But then I moved to New York and did that again. I've been doing it since, yeah, Do you miss New York at all? You're done with this city.
I don't miss it quite yet. I've only been out of there a few months. But I mean, actually, hearing you say what you just said does make me miss how artistic and creative and like amazing the comedy is there. I'm like thinking especially, Joe, about the outdoor shows.
Yeah, oh yeah, you should, what you should miss is the outdoor shows. I would say those are the things that, you know, when you think of creative precipice, that's the tippy top. You think, how do I get those? You know, the truth is you do so much better if you were just a dog. You know, that's the thing that makes you really sad, is if you were just a dog that got up on stage and you were able to sit still for 10 minutes, people would go nuts.
Totally. I've thought about that like a gimmick. I need a dog or a guitar or a piano when I'm doing stand up.
Yeah. Can you do any of those?
I could teach myself piano, I think. I'm a little musical, but I think it's doable because the guys who do the piano, they're doing chords, right? Have you ever, like, what musical instruments do you work into your stand up?
Yeah, flute. No, I have no musical talent. It's really tough. But I admire it. I really admire it. I think it's good. And I do think that honestly, music does. It could make the difference in a public show, outdoor show. Music could change the game. You're right. And people would love it. People would love it.
I wish I had like a baby grand piano.
Oh, can you wheel it out? People would be eyes glued. I think I'm gonna keep mice in my pockets. I think that would get people. I say, well, if you don't like this, look about these things in my pockets. Bunch of mice come out.
Think that's good. It'll like get them out of their seats.
Yeah, say, what the heck? Well, let's keep listening and laughing.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good idea. You could tour with that. It's
I
like,
could.
is she gonna drop the mice?
Yeah, is she gonna drive? Yeah, the tour's called Mice in Her Pockets, and it's just gets people out. More 70, 80 people come out. It could be good.
What is, I have so much I want to talk to you about, Joe, but I don't want to take up your whole day here.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you
Thrilled.
so much.
Thrilled.
What is the difference? What's the big difference between writing for with the group from Good Timing and writing with the group from Late Night with Jimmy Fallon? You don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
Okay.
You can answer a more neutral question, which is how's soup lately? Have you been eating any
Sure.
soup?
I'm so sick of soup. I couldn't even touch the stuff. I freaking hate it. I hate it. I can't touch that stuff. But it's endless. It's endless. You ever try to eat a bowl of soup? It's endless. You're like, I was done 16 bites ago. But no, I would say the group from Good Timing, we did just make a short film together as part of a class assignment. Like it was, we've been in this class, weekly class, for a little over 3 years. Okay, so it was 3 years in March. And so I was like in January, so about 8 months ago, I was like, let's shake it up a little bit. Because this class is good, but it's like, I think sometimes I want to give a longer term project. And so it's like, let's make a short film together. And so I was like, let's write it together and then we'll shoot it and edit it. And we wrote it together over the course of 2 months and then we shot it. And it was supposed to, I gave the base idea and then they built on it and it became so zany. I could not believe it. It was the zaniest thing. The two people had accents in ways I did not expect. Okay. And like really beautiful stuff going on. And one woman gave a live birth. Okay. And this was,
Stop.
it was incredible. I thought, how did we get here? But you know, if we write with 22 people, you're gonna get there.
How do you do that? Do you break out into groups, and are you often surprised by how zany or raunchy it gets?
Yeah, but I think what we did, so the base idea was a staring contest. So it was like the the senior center was going to have a staring contest, right? And that's like they had a staring contest every year. It was going to be a mockumentary about that. And so then, you know, it's kind of like the group kind of is like, oh, everyone gets to come up with their own characters. And then like trying to figure out what's the story that links all of them together. That was like a little bit more happened in the, I'd say in post, but I would say that in general, this woman, Sarah Jacobson, was the editor, and she just like volunteered online. And then like, she was like, I gave her all the footage. She was like, oh my God. And then she did it. She made it all made sense.
Wow. Were you a part of that process? Did you sit with her at all?
I would like give notes, but she mostly like, the main note I had was just like, make sure everybody has like a moment. And she's like, got it. And then like, from there, we were like, she's like, okay, here's the story. And the story, I would say, has a beginning, middle, and end. It really does. So you can't say that. You can't say it doesn't. But it is a wacky short. It is wacky, wacky, wacky. One contestant breathes fire. So, yeah.
Wait, Joe, you were directing, correct?
Yeah, I guess in a loose sense, yeah, I was directing.
So, like, it was not, like, traditional film directing?
Oh, definitely alternative film directing. It was, like, it was basically just, like, trying to figure out, like, at one moment, we had everybody break out into a church hymn, and that's just what we had to do. You know what I mean? We just had to do that because that was part of it. One woman wanted to be the music director, and then we realized we didn't have a song for her to lead everybody in, and then she knew a church hymn, so we did that. It was like, it's pretty wild. I'll send it to you. It's pretty out there. And I would say
I would be honored.
At a place like The Tonight Show, I'd say it probably wouldn't get that wacky, right? It would probably, maybe it would get, one of those things would happen, but maybe not all of, I'd say it'd be a little bit more, the joke would be, you know, defined, contained, done three times, maybe four, you know what I mean, figured out, you know, a little more precision, but that's not necessarily better, you know, that's just, it's a little cleaner, but
like it's more of like a science at the Tonight Show, and then is writing Singles Retreat the complete other opposite end of the spectrum, kind of.
I would say, yeah, I'd say for sure. And you kind of, you know, you say like with Singles Retreat, I wrote that one and then they kind of improvised based on it. And it was like, I don't know why I even write anything. Whatever that comes out of their mouths is better than anything I've. So they did a good job with that.
Do your students of stand-up, do they end up coming out and seeing your live show?
I see some of them, yeah. I've seen some of them do stand-up. Some of them are like more active in the scene.
Are any of your students from Good Timing now like running clubs?
I wouldn't say that anyone is, you know, in charge of a club, but I would say that even before, I think because Good Timing happened in the middle of the pandemic, if they were going out before, I didn't know about it because like nobody was going out. But then I know that since I've only known them through the pandemic, I know that they are going out more now, that it's safer. But there's some pretty active people. That's, what's that word that is like indefatigable?
Oh yeah, like kind of a determination.
Yes.
Indefatigable? What is that word?
Yeah, that word, I think that describes a lot of them. If you can say that word, that's you describing them. That's your challenge for today. Hard word. Too many syllables.
I will get off Singles Retreat at some point, but I want to know how you casted it. Did it just kind of get naturally, like people were all given their moment?
I think we had 3 days to shoot, and so I needed to give some people more lines than others, but I figured that we we had one day where everybody was there. It was in the Poconos. We shot it in the Poconos.
Oh, right. And I'm familiar with that beautiful area of the
country.
Are
you really? Did you go there ever?
Yeah, every summer.
Are you serious? To that romantic hotel?
To one of them. I think there's multiple. Not the one you're thinking of. Because I think I might know. Wait, which did you shoot it at a retreat or something?
We shot it at the Pocono Palace.
That's huge.
It is huge.
Were there people staying there?
Yes, there were.
What was the entire vibe of the Pocono Palace?
Well, we can't afford to close it down. So yeah, there were people staying there for sure.
Yeah. It was a slammed.
Yeah, there was a full wedding. We were like, we got to hold filming for the wedding, the real wedding. But yeah, it was, and the, you know, when you shoot a film, you're supposed to feed everybody. But the only food options at the Pocono Palace are like romantic surf and turf. So people had surf and turf every night. I was like, this is wild. Everyone's eating surf and turf.
I often wonder why, like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's surf beautiful. And turf in the Poconos? That makes no sense.
It's what the American dream is. Why do you know the Poconos? Where did you go in the Poconos?
My parents are from New York City. So growing up, a family vacation destination for them was the Poconos. And we've continued it to this day. However, that area is kind of so desolate now. It's like you said, I mean, it's a complete food desert, except for I've heard great things about the surf and turf at the Pocono Palace. But other than that, it's interesting to me, like, that it was once thriving and now it's so desolate in the Poconos.
Yeah. Is that what happened to the Catskills too?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I like watching like abandoned mall videos and they're like,
Do you
know what I mean?
Yeah, there was like that one abandoned Catskills hotel that they're turning into something now. They're like, I forget what they're turning it into, something cool. But it's like all of these, like the indoor swimming pool is preserved and like these like huge windows. And it used to be such a glamorous place in the Catskills, and now they bought it and they're turning it into. I think it's the place where they shot Dirty Dancing. That's what they're rehabbing it.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And the places in the Poconos are just like Dirty Dancing, right? I mean, it was probably based, or no, Dirty Dancing might be the Catskills. I gotta rewatch it. You gotta rewatch it.
But it was the Poconos was very romantic. There was only circular beds, okay? Which is really hard to sleep on, even as one. And then there was only heart-shaped tubs, and it was just the most romantic place I've ever seen. I couldn't believe it. There was an arcade. There was curling. There's a lake. There's nature. Basketball. Archery. Golf. Tennis. It's great. There's great nature. They say basically in the Poconos, they're like, if you're not banging, there's other activities. That's like their whole thing. It's amazing.
Yeah, I never got that.
Like, why should a martini glass hot tub or a heart-shaped hot tub from World War II in the Poconos get you all revved up? Like, ew, no. Some might say it has the opposite effect.
I think that there's something sexy about, like, if it's a martini glass, being the olive. You know what I mean? I think that that's the symbol. That's a sex symbol. I'm the olive, you know? But I also think that there's so many mirrors. Okay, that's the other thing about this place. There's mirrors everywhere. All of the bed is surrounded by mirrors. The ceiling is mirrors. And that's the prop that I thought that was gorgeous, but then for filming, it was like, oh, camera. Oh, there's a camera. Oh, yeah, if you camera. You know, and it's cameras everywhere because there's mirrors everywhere. Tricky, tricky, tricky.
Did you pick the destination because of the sexiness, as you put it?
Yeah, for sure. It was beautiful. I'd go back there. I'd go back there in a heartbeat. I love it.
Yeah, because growing up, the place that we went on a family vacation had no such hot tubs. However, when anyone heard or hears you're going to the Poconos, they literally are like, oh, cocktail glass hot tubs, huh? I had a dentist growing up, my orthodontist. He'd be like, oh, you know, every year when July came around, he's like, oh, little Greg's going to get in the cocktail glass hot tub. And I'm like, I'm eight. Like, I didn't even know what he meant. And now when you look back, all that stuff is gross. I don't like, or no, I'm not saying it's gross. First of all,
yeah,
I'm thrilled that we're talking about the Poconos.
Yeah.
Second of all, I just find, you know, it's interesting when a hotel prides itself on tacky yet sexy decor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there was like open fireplaces everywhere. It was just like, you know, I think that it's like, there's a lot of, you know, sex positivity right now. That's a big thing. But I would say that sex positivity comes in the form of like, kind of like kink pride and like, kind of just like, kind of being like, being like proud of being a freak. And that's beautiful. But I would say that this is sex positive in a way that's like, you are a lover. You love who you are having sex with. That is the kink, you know, and that is, that's a beautiful thing too, but it's a different kind of sex positivity for sure.
And like, I'm just not even a mirror person in general. Like, why did they put mirrors on like ceilings?
Because you're trying to create cruelty. That's what you, that's the only thing I can imagine. It's like, can you seeing the things you're, God never wanted you to see from different angles, the angles you never thought possible. Mirrors.
Wait, how serious are you that you would go back and vacation in the Poconos? Like, I feel like if you we're going to do it, you could have done it by now. Like, it's not out of the realm of, you're like, oh, I hope to get back there.
Because it is a nice area. I always say, if I ever win the lottery, like the Powerball, big one, the very first thing I do after I win is take 18 months and just travel around the Poconos.
I should go back to the Poconos. I should go. I haven't done a vacation in a long time, but I should go. That would be good. I just need to rent a car and find a dog sitter. But these are things that are doable. They're doable.
You need the vacation. I mean, like,
I haven't worked in a really long time, but yeah, I guess vacation is for anybody.
How is your dog?
He's doing really good. He's curled up laying over there. I don't know if you can see him, but no, he's kind of blending into the pillows. He's like the gray thing that's not a pillow.
Yeah. Thank you. That's our first dog guest. Oh. No. Sadly, no. The place where I live now, everyone has a pet. Like, we stand out for not having a pet. So that is my shame. Hey, Joe, good talking to you.
I do think that you could, that's good, because then you could go on vacation whenever you want.
I know, it is a big concern, Joe. It's like, I absolutely adore animals, but part of it is like, even if I went out to dinner, I would be thinking about the dog or cat.
Mm-hmm. Haunts you for the rest of your days.
And are you noticing yourself aging against your pet? Is that fun?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's technically older than me, but, you know, he doesn't seem to kind of take the age as much as I don't know, we're kind of neck and neck here.
Joe, how much info do you give people when you ask them to be a part of one of your brilliant podcasts or shows? How much do you tell them?
Because I get no info from some people.
Sure.
I prefer like a petit,
examination. I would say that I don't really have podcasts right now that have guests. There's like, I do one show, but it's like the people that are on it are listeners. So I would say that but I'm sure they're briefed. But I would say that on in general, they actually asked to be on it. The listeners asked. So there's a lot of consent there. But I would say that in general, when I ask people to do like live shows, I try to be as explicit as possible. But even then, I'm kind of shocked how they turn out. You know what I mean? So I'd say I'm probably guilty of, the surprise. How long did you do your live show with Larry? How long did you run that show?
Well, there were a couple iterations of it. And the last one, I think was like a couple of years. So part of the thing about hosting a show or of live stand-up or hosting a podcast is I'm like, how do I ask people? And I want them to feel comfortable knowing that they could say no to me. So what was your question again? I'm sorry. Larry's right here. Larry, come over.
Come over here, Larry.
I wish. That would be great if Larry Murphy sat just off mic in a recliner.
He was just sitting quietly watching you.
That would be great. Larry Murphy is amazing. Joe Firestone! Yo, Joe, thank you again for being here live on 95.com. If any of our great listeners are out there driving on Interstate 95, don't forget to stop by and say hi. Joe, it's so great hanging out with you. I'm curious, Joe, what's been your experience teaching people and classes about stand-up comedy?
Well, I gotta preface that I don't really teach stand-up. I just teach like comedy generation. Like if you like to, I just try to teach like how to come up with ideas really fast, which is not exactly a stand-up skill. I would say that it's like basically I'm teaching game show. I'm teaching like how to respond on panel show if you ever go to Brit. Like that's basically what I'm trying to teach. But it's like, because I don't think I even know how to do stand-up. And most days I really don't, especially after an outdoor show. So I think that it's like the people that can like analyze things and get them into like formulas and like be able to like teach according to a doctrine, I admire that so much. My brain does not work like that, but I really admire that skill.
Aren't you good at that though too? Like, haven't you ever been made to write a great short joke for like Jimmy Fallon? I'm sure you're probably pretty good at that though too, aren't you? No?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I am good at that. I'm not good at that. But I was like one time, like my boyfriend, he's like really good at like figuring out formulas and like figuring out like ways to break down things into digestible pieces. And like he gave it a workshop to them, he was a guest instructor on how to write an onion headline. And he came up with like this like 2-page document on how to write an onion headline. And the people in the class were so grateful for actual learning, an actual like tangible lesson, and like they were just like, please let him come back, please trade you for him, please. And I was like, nope, today we're coming up with restaurant items for dogs. And they're like, no.
Okay, pencils down. That's amazing.
Doesn't that add to the love you have for your partner?
Sure, I think he's really cool and really good at talking and thinking. And I think he's amazing. He's real, and I think that's why he's a professional writer. But I don't have that brain, unfortunately. And much to the disappointment of the people in the class, they're like, please bring anyone to us that can teach. But they suffer through me. They're good at that.
They're like, Joe, do you know any other people who teach?
And I'm like, I'll look, but.
You're like, I'll check Facebook.
Does anyone teach here?
I feel like what you do is also kind of like help people develop their like witty or their wit, right? Maybe a little bit. You try to like build a muscle for like humor and wit. Have you ever written books? writing books is completely different from writing stand-up, but in a way that's kind of more prolific because you have to all get it all out on the page. I mean, I think average stand-up comics write like a joke a week.
Whoa.
I mean, not like I'm not nothing against, I'm not implying any laziness.
Dude, that's impressive. I was like, dang, a whole joke every week? Whoa. Greg, I'll tell you this though. I did write a book, okay? I did. This book I thought was gonna be a big top seller. I thought I'm gonna be fighting off editors, fighting off book agents. Turns out nobody fucking wanted this thing. Wrote a whole damn book. Had to self-publish. Only choice. Had to self-publish. Cost thousands of dollars. Riddled with typos. Huge plot points gone. Huge holes throughout. Can't stop it. Have to sell it. Have to put it out. Horrible.
Oh, Joe, isn't it free to self-publish?
No, not the way I did it.
What did you spend on, like, marketing?
No, still haven't even paid for that.
Wait, when did you publish the book?
Not out yet. It's out any second now.
I'm actually fascinated by self-publishing. I mean,
Should be. You should be.
maybe it has long-term potential to climb the charts. Is it on, what's it on, Kindle?
No. No.
Is it on any like book platforms?
No. No. No.
I gotta ask you about a mutual pal. How's Joe Pera? You ever talk to Joe Pera?
Yeah, I had a dream about him last night.
No.
I did. I had a dream about him last night. So I guess I haven't talked to him in a bit, but I did have a dream about him last night. That counts. He was trying to help me find a bathroom in a hotel. I had to go.
No
He's trying to help
No
me.
way.
Yeah, he's trying to help me. It's
Did you recognize the hotel?
no, I was like, this is unfamiliar to me. He's like, I know it. Let me help you. So I think he's
Was it
doing pretty
just you
good.
two? Yeah, you
No,
seem good.
we kept running into mutual friends. But he's like, oh yeah, I'm trying to help her find the bathroom.
Do you relate
So
your dreams to people when you wake up out of them?
I've learned that that is of little interest and not good for people to hear, and they always take it the wrong way. So if Joe happens to listen to this podcast and hear this, then I imagine he'll take it the wrong way. I don't know what way he'll take it. I don't know what way you could, but I probably won't tell him directly if I had to guess.
Aren't you still
You?
kind of like sometimes tempted to tell the best dreams? Or no?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Or do you tell people when you dream about them?
I don't, but I love it when my wife does.
Really, you like hearing about her dreams.
Yeah, I'm great with it. Do
You
you,
interpret them.
unfortunately, she never dreams about Joe. Have you done that in the past?
No, this was kind of a first time I thought, what's he doing in there? Helping me go to the bath, not go to the bathroom, but he helped me find it.
Yeah, I find it comforting when I recognize people in my dreams. I'm like, you know, I'm like literally like hoping to go to sleep and like see some celebrity.
Sure, yeah. I say, oh, F. Murray Abraham.
It's always F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, well, he's on strike.
But I did meet Meryl Streep once too.
In a dream? That's a great one. Was she helping you?
It was kind of in passing. I just felt like she took to me so friendly that I was like, okay, you know, she sees something in me.
Oh, she, of course she does. And she would. And she would. You know she would.
It's been so good talking to you.
You too. What a treat. I loved this experience. When I think about you, I think first word, jolly. Okay?
Thank you.
But I'm also just like, and I have very fond memories of running into you.
Yes, I remember too.
Where I'm like, oh, he's a great person to run into.
Yes, I think I'm remembering now. My wife and I ran into you in Park Slope, and you might have been with your mom.
Yes, yeah, but yeah, I bet so. Mm-hmm.
That's so special. I love that.
But I feel like you probably a lot of people think that way about you. Good guy to run into. You know what I mean? So maybe that's why you feel like you don't connect as much with people, because, you know, you're just, you know, people are thinking, when am I going to run into Greg? You know, maybe you got to take a day trip to New York, you know, walk in all the regular spots and let people, you know, get their joys for one day. I think that'd be good. You need to do some community service. People will be thrilled. You can walk away from people thinking, I made their day.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Andrea Rosen, who is going to be on the pod, I think. Her and her husband, you know, John.
Uh-huh.
They used to be my neighbors in Park Slope, and they saw me two particular times. Once they told me that they were pregnant, and they said, don't tell anyone.
Oh.
They saw me on the street, and they said, you're the first person we're telling.
Whoa!
And then, as if that wasn't weird enough, like 2 years later, it happened again. And they said, they were getting on the subway, and they said, we're going to City Hall to get married. Greg, don't tell anyone, Greg. You're the only person we're telling, because we're seeing you again on the way to the
Whoa! See? See, this is the kind of thing, this is the impact you have on people. This is good. That's a good sign.
Joe, you are making me feel so good. You're bringing such amazing energy here.
No, it's coming. It's coming from you. It's ricocheting from me. And you know that. You know I'm not like this. No, you know I'm not like this.
I don't feel like I'm like this either, but it feels like since right now there's like a good energy, it is, we are like this, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you are. I really do think you are.
When we saw you in Park Slope, we were like, we had maybe just moved to a new apartment. We were like, great, we're going to see Joe and her mom every day. You know, you think like, oh yeah, okay, that'll be like routine. We'll like catch up with Joe's mom every day.
Wouldn't that be nice? She doesn't even live here. She was just visiting.
How is she doing? Is she good? Send her my best.
I will. She's doing good. Yeah, she's doing good. Living in St. Louis.
Do you miss St. Louis? Like, what do you think about when you think of Missouri?
Okay. I would say that it's, when I think of Missouri, I think of like some, I got some good family, good friends there. So I'm like, oh, that's good. I would say that in general, if you're like, do you want to live there? I'd be like, how do I make money? I'd be like, what do you want me to do there? So I can't imagine living there again without really taking some pretty sharp turns. But I would say that on the whole, I like it there.
Oh, Joe, would you please consider sometime in the future doing this again?
Yeah.
Because I barely scratched the surface with you. I mean, I've kept you almost an hour. I got to let you go.
Well, I loved this experience. I had a great time. This is a great podcast. You should tell people. Next time, don't ask people like being nice about it. Say you'd love this. Get a little bossy with it. People deserve that.